and welcome aboard the Battleship Pretension. I am not Tyler Smith.
I am David Bax, joining us in Tyler's stead is Julie Cesnovich. How are you, Julie?
I am well. How are you?
I'm okay. Tyler is still going through it. Still very rough. I spent hours with him just a couple days ago. It's good to catch up, but he's still got a long road to go, a long uncertain road to go. You can find out what's going on with him at caringbridge.org/visit/Tyler and Jennifer Smith. That's caringbridge.org/visit/Tyler and Jennifer Smith. There's also a link there to the GoFundMe to help Tyler and his wonderful family with their many, many medical bills. We continue to wish him the best and hope that someday he is back on this podcast, making it better than I am able to. Julie, we have a guest, you and I.
We do.
I'm not going to introduce, or you can introduce them in a moment, but first yes. I want to tell the listeners about tweakedaudio.com. Tweakedaudio.com is where you go for professional quality earbuds in a variety of stylish styles and colorful colors. They look great. They sound great. Tyler and I generally use them each and every day of our lives. Today, I was listening to, should I go with the bad thing or the good thing? You know what? It's a bigger name thing. So I was listening to you guys. There was a time, Julie, listeners, there was a time I was a huge fan of the Smashing Pumpkins, and I still have a soft place in my heart for them. But they put out a third of an album. They have a big like three-part rock opera coming out in the spring, and they released the first third of it on to streaming services, and I don't know, they've just lost something. It just feels like a shadow of their former selves. But at least I was listening on my tweakedaudio.com earbuds, so at least sounded it as good as it could. Those are available for a low price at tweakedaudio.com, but if you use the offer code pretension at checkout, you get one third off that low price and no shipping charges. So please go to tweakedaudio.com and use the offer code pretension.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Julie?
Yes.
We're back from the break we just took.
Yes.
Who's our guest?
Our guest is a man that I met 17 years ago. He was wearing a sweater reminiscent of the one worn at the beginning of The Big Lebowski. And somehow he's still hanging around. Folks, it's Scott and I.
I still have the sweater.
He still has the sweater.
It's freaking awesome.
Is it in good shape, or is it ratty? Or?
I would not describe it as ratty. I mean, it started out ratty, so I guess it depends on your definition.
Oh, okay.
But still pretty cozy.
Yeah.
Speaking of long cherished items of clothing, before we recorded, Natalie and I were packing for our trip to Idaho for Thanksgiving, and I was looking for like cold weather stuff, which I haven't really worn since pre-COVID. B, we've moved since then. Yeah. And I have a beloved scarf that I could not find, but I found it.
Yeah.
And that feeling, I was like standing on like a step ladder with my hand in a bag of like old award screeners. Like, cause I looked everywhere else and I was like, on the top shelf of my closet, there's this bag of award screeners. Maybe I tossed something in there and I couldn't even see in there. I was just reaching up, and you could like, Natalie like saw the look on my face when I realized that I had a hold of my scarf. It was such a glorious feeling to find something that I really like. It's a great scarf.
But not priced enough to actually pack in a sensible place. You had to pack it with old
discs.
You've
moved, so. You've moved. Sometimes things, you know, you start off with the best of plans.
You sure do.
And then sometimes certain things just end up.
You always lose one thing. There's always one thing that just goes, I think.
Yeah, maybe I don't know if I've quite discovered what that thing was. I thought it was this this scarf, but I found it.
Okay, well, hopefully it's not something more essential.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
Darla.
No, it was right there in a bag next to an old DVD screener of The Box Trolls. I don't know if that's really what it was. I just like coming up with random references. But we're not here to talk about award screeners, although we could, because it's that time of year. What are we here to talk about, Julie?
We are here to talk about, so I had this idea. I was thinking about discussing musicians or musical artists who became actors, like who were established musical artists who transitioned to acting. Because I think the fundamental question of that transition is like, okay, they clearly have star persona. They clearly have presence. They have charisma. Does it translate, right? Does it translate across genres and mediums? And I think in some cases it does, and sometimes it doesn't, and sometimes it's really a mixed bag. And I just wanted to kind of explore that topic and of the people who have done it and see, you know, where they all landed.
So, okay.
Yeah.
I'm gonna throw to you.
Yeah, I was figuring, I'm like, how do I organize this that we're not just shouting random names at each other?
And that would be Battleship Retention, though, to just, I mean,
well, true, but
it's going to descend to that at some point.
It will, yeah. But this is me, and I like order and organization. Yeah. So I was figuring going loosely chronologically might be good, just because kind of the reasons that people would make that shift kind of change over time, right? Because you early on, like, musicians just started acting because like their agents and managers and studios just like owned them and would just be like, you're doing this now. Mm-hmm. And then over time, it kind of became more about people, I think, genuinely wanting to try it. So I figure you start way back. I know you, Scott, you found some people who are like going back to the 30s even.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if you want to start there, certainly my beloved Marie Chevalier. I shouldn't say my beloved about somebody who was like a Nazi collaborator, but you know. We all
it's to live by.
We all trend into problematic territory at some point. He recovered. Then he's, you know, seduced Audrey Hepburn. Or no, he was her dad in that movie. I don't know what's going on. Marie Chevalier was a big star of the French stage in the 1920s, who transitioned to motion pictures, chiefly in the early sound era, when they would literally just pop in front of a camera and start him off singing because he was just that personable. You watch a movie like 1 Hour with You or The Smiling Lieutenant, and really all you need is a fixed shot of Marie Chevalier. Set him off for 5 minutes. That's cinema, baby. Nazi collaboration aside, big fan. And I've always thought he was kind of an underrated actor in general because the definition of acting is so narrow. And I think that will prove a valid template for this episode as we go along, is that like, yeah, we have some people in here that turned out to be very accomplished actors, but mostly they got by on having a lot of personality. And to me anyway, that's more than enough. What Marie Chevalier did in those movies, almost nobody else could do. And nor would you want to try to make anybody else sound like the most grotesque Frenchman of all time. And sing songs in like a mostly convincing way, and just kind of like smile at pretty girls and have a gay old time. But all those classic Lubitsch movies that he was in were pretty fantastic.
Did he partially inspire Pepe Le Pew? It was him and
Charles Boyer.
Yeah. To give you a sense of just how French we're talking.
And just how horny.
Yeah. I enjoyed Marie Chevalier too. I think again, it's like we do have to think of like, what is the definition of acting here? Cause he was not Meryl Streep in that out there. No. He was not like going method. He was not like, he was being himself, but in terms of like, thumbs up, thumbs down. Did this transition work? For sure.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
But that is a whole category you're talking about of like the people are buying their ticket to the movie, not to see, you know, Elvis Presley become a new character. They want to see Elvis Presley be Elvis in a different movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
for sure.
So there's that category. And then there's like actual like character actors category as well.
Yeah, for sure. Someone actually, another person from the 30s who might fall kind of in between the two is Bing Crosby, whose musical career was just taking off when he started to be in movies, but was famous enough from the radio to kind of be billed in that regard. And if you watch his early movies, I mean, he's mostly just like on screen to sing, but he did eventually win Academy Award for acting.
Yeah.
And certainly developed into pretty, I think, notable performer and distinctive actor.
He's also funny. He's like surprisingly funny for like, given what we know of his persona. And I think in a lot of his earlier roles, it skewed more comedy. It skewed musical comedy, and he kind of only found his way into drama, but like, he is funny in the Road to movies.
Oh yeah.
What was that one we saw at UCLA? Whatever. Anyway, the point is
Broadcast?
The Big Broadcast. Like, yeah, he's funny in these. But what's interesting too is he had this persona of being like so cool all the time.
Yeah.
He was a very cool guy. And this segues well into another major, you know, person in this genre, which is Frank Sinatra. I bring this up because they had like a fake rivalry, which is very funny. Kind of in the way that like Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman do now. Like, they had that in the 40s. Which is really funny to listen to. I got into this phase where I was listening to old radio broadcasts from World War II. I mean, listen, it happens to all of us. And they are like, because the joke was always that they were ragging on Bing Crosby for being old, and he was ragging on Frank Sinatra for being scrawny, which it doesn't seem like there's a lot of mileage there, but somehow there was. So yeah, Bing Crosby was always this very like kind of cool, detached, and that could be funny or it could be tragic. But like Frank Sinatra, I think for as much as we think of Frank Sinatra as being a cool guy now, he was like very neurotic. Like, he's a very kind of neurotic guy. I read a biography of him. No chill, this guy. Absolutely no chill. And I think he actually used that very effectively as an actor. I mean, he won an Oscar in From Here to Eternity. And I think he turned kind of that neurosis into like vulnerability in a lot of his roles. I mean, he's good in that. He's good in The Man with the Golden Arm.
Yeah. Some Came Running. He's all neuroses. He's amazing.
Yeah. Even in some of the lighter roles like Ocean's 11 or... was it Robin and the Seven Hoods?
Yeah.
Like, even where he's kind of just like vibing, like he's like a weird guy. Like, we don't think of it that way now, but like Frank Sinatra is a weird guy. And I think he definitely tapped into that effectively, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, certainly the rest of the Rat Pack fared pretty well themselves, Dean Martin, most notably. And I mean, I don't think he ever developed into being as good of an actor as Frank Sinatra, but in some ways I prefer watching him, not only because he starred with Jerry Lewis a lot, I'm a big Jerry Lewis fan, but you watch something like Rio Bravo, where he's given some real meat to do, or for that matter, Some Came Running, where Frank Sinatra has the meatier role, but Martin kind of provides the good counterweight to be like, oh, here's a guy who has no soul. So at least Sinatra's got that going for him. And Sammy Davis Jr., you know, he wasn't given as many opportunities, but hell, was that movie we talked about in the TCM Fest?
A Man Called Adam.
Yeah, he was great in that.
I was on the fence about whether to include him, because you may recall we watched a movie he made when he was 7 years old.
Sure.
He was in, it's like a Vitaphone talkie. It's like a super crazy thing. Wow. But even when he is 7 years old, you're like, oh my God, this guy's a star, because he's tap dancing and singing. He's seven. I think it's on YouTube or something. It's called Rufus Jones for President. And it asks the question, what if a seven-year-old Sammy Davis Jr. was elected president? asking that question in the 30s, it's a little racist and weird, but it's still, you know, he's very talented. But yeah, it is a shame he wasn't given more opportunities. What with the racism? I don't want to steamroll you, David, if you have anything to say about any of these people.
No, that's okay.
No, great. Also in the 40s, Doris Day was an established singer before she became an actress. And what's interesting is we've seen a couple really early roles of hers. I think Romance on the High Seas is one from 1948. And they didn't figure out her star persona right away. So Oscar Levant?
Yeah, I think Levant.
Anyway, that guy. At one point, he famously quipped, I knew Doris Day before she was a virgin, which like she didn't always have that persona. Mm-hmm. So in Romance on the High Seas, she's like horny. She's like kind of saucy and horny. And you're like
dirty, flirty and thriving.
Yeah, you're like doing a double take and you're like, is this the same person? But I'm always fascinated by that, like watching, you know, actors before they have locked into the persona they're known for and being like, oh, this could have gone a different way. Cause she was great, you know, and she like, you know, obviously I don't have to tell you, she has a ton of charisma. She was, I think, Oscar nominated, or was she not? Maybe they just gave her that honorary one later on. I don't know. But obviously oodles of charisma, great singer, very fun to watch. But yeah, it is interesting to watch that and be like, what if it had gone a different way with this? But they just
nominated in 1960 for Pillow Talk for lead actress.
Okay.
She always kind of pushed back on that, the notion that she had a virgin persona. I think she gave some example from Pillow Talk, in fact, that like, she was like, yeah, That girl knows what's up because she's been around already and just doesn't want to like repeat her errors.
Hey, fair enough. Also in that era, Burl Ives was a singer first, before he became an actor. I mean, he won an Oscar in the '50s for The Big Country. He was Big Daddy in Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. So obviously a very formidable presence. Harry
it has to be large and have a deep voice. That's yeah. Like a start for an acting career.
It really is. You can do a lot with that. Harry Belafonte is another one. Started as a calypso singer, turned into a very compelling actor. I mean, I think to the point where people don't talk about his calypso career very much. I don't know if that's because his acting overshadowed it, or maybe he was a terrible calypso singer. I don't know. I'm not that familiar with his musical career.
Okay. When I think of Harry Belafonte, I actually probably think of him as like an activist.
Bobby Darin had a bit of an acting career.
I think he's good in Too Late Blues.
He is, yeah.
I mean, it's not like Cassavetes' best and not the most Cassavetes movie, but as like a solid late melodrama, it's really good.
Yeah, he was even nominated for an Oscar for a different movie. I think it was called Captain Newman MD.
Sure.
I don't know anything about that.
Remember the movie where Kevin Spacey played Bobby Darin?
Yeah, Beyond the Sea.
And he directed it too.
Yeah, when he was like already 15 years older than Bobby Darin ever was.
Yep. Sometimes you just don't get around to it and you're not letting those rights go. And
it happens. Yeah. I mean, what was that? The big one, like at Eternity's Gate, where like Willem Dafoe was like a quarter century at least older than Van Gogh like ever was.
Yeah, I think the director was like, well, they aged harder back then.
I mean, he's not wrong.
Yeah,
it is true. Yeah.
They aged so much harder. They all smoked and there was no sunscreen. It was bad. It was bad. Also, this one was borderline, so I wasn't sure whether to include it, but Anne Margaret, like, she kind of started singing and acting right at the same time, but I would say singing had a tiny bit of a head start. And they realized very quickly that she was the total package. Well, I set myself up for that. But yeah, she apparently was marketed at the time as like the female Elvis. Like they were really trying to make her that. And I think she even covered some Elvis songs. Like they were really trying to position her opposite Elvis,
quite literally.
Yeah. And then they started putting them in movies together. Obviously they figured out she had the it factor. I mean, for like the opening of Bye Bye Birdie is just her in a void, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. Like you really need charisma to sell that.
Yeah. I mean, she's like, pure vibes. I can't remember how you described it after we watched Viva Las Vegas, but it's like, I mean, she could certainly out charisma Elvis, and it's worth getting into Elvis because I like Elvis on screen, but he was well matched and kind of encouraged. You could tell like Anne Margaret was like so good and so sexy in the movie that he was trying to give it a little extra to boot. I haven't seen some of Elvis's more acclaimed films. I know people really like him in Wild in the Country. I really like Viva Las Vegas and Jailhouse Rock. The best though is, oh shoot. Not
King Creole.
King Creole. Yeah. Which was his first movie, I think. Hmm. And was really where he was trying to, I mean, this was covered in the movie that came out this year, but where he was really trying to be like James Dean or like any one of the best actors of the day. And King Creole was directed by Michael Curtiz and, you know, it's got some chops. And he, like I said, he is really good in it, but it does kind of, you can feel it coming up against kind of the singer limitations and a little bit of lacking classical training, but not for lack of trying. You can just see that he's holding himself back kind of instinctively at times. But this era on the whole is like kind of my favorite for singers in movies because it was so driven by like, just like studio heads and record owners and all that kind of stuff. And they just like forced directors to work with all these singers who like had varying degrees of talent or even interest in being in the movies.
Does Elvis want to act?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think he did.
Okay.
Cause I think he wanted to be like a James Dean.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's just some interesting like friction that develops as a result of, people being forced to work together that I've always enjoyed. And like, even these days when, director, you can tell, I mean, this is like jumping ahead several eras, so not to throw off your whole system, but we
how
did promise
dare you down.
But for as much as people rag on Don't Worry Darling, which I know I generally like it more than most broadly, but I think people were unfair to Harry Styles who is fine in the movie, but I was just kind of charmed by the whole presence of him because it kind of harkened back to this era of just like trying to make a singer happen because they know they can juice the box office with them.
For sure. Yeah.
But I don't know if this is exactly what you're talking about, but I was thinking about a guy like Gene Autry. And like, is the premise of this episode actually like coming at it from a present day bias where we see people as like filling one role and then branching out into another? Whereas a guy like Gene Autry, like, is he a singer? He's an actor. He was just like an entertainer. And so he was right. Just like in stuff, you know? So like, I don't know, where does one begin and the other?
Yeah.
End? I mean, think that's kind of the era you're talking about with just like studio heads or producers and just putting people in stuff because they were big and they were entertainers.
Yeah. And also like the types of entertainment, like if you go back to the 20th century, it looked different. I mean, you had like popular stage reviews, you had vaudeville, you had like these styles of entertainment that did kind of blur the line in a lot of ways. So it's like, that's kind of why I wanted to go chronologically, is because, yeah, I think the nature of this kind of crossover or whatever you want to call it does evolve. You know?
Yeah, and this goes back to an earlier era, but I didn't put down like Al Jolson for that reason, is that he was like kind of a Broadway star, but only insofar as like they kind of crafted shows around, unfair to say, his persona, when his persona was performing in blackface. But I will throw out some love for Hallelujah, I'm a Bum Again, which is a great early musical where he thankfully does not perform in blackface. But yeah, I mean, there's tons of folks like that who then came up through movies because it was the next logical step to the, yeah, the general entertainer persona.
I'm trying to think of like a more recent example. Sorry, Julie. I'm just trying to think of a more recent example of someone who was like just brought their persona to movies and not tried to do, you know, like, I love Cher, but like Cher, like, clearly was like, she's a singer and then also like a serious actress at the same time. I'm trying to think of someone like, I don't know, maybe Whitney Houston at the time, maybe Christina Aguilera, maybe tried it with Burlesque, you know, like.
Yeah. I mean, I was also thinking of like Mariah Carey with Glitter or Britney Spears with Crossroads.
Right.
Movies I haven't seen, so I can't really speak to them. But
I saw both of those. They're very forgettable. I think those are the kind of movies that get like reputations for being terrible, but they're actually just like
boring.
Yeah. They're just nothing movies.
Yeah. But I guess I don't know the extent to which either of them play on their personas or like extensions of them. I kind of figure they are, but I just don't know.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I do feel like kind of the music, especially as we have fewer musical movies, I do feel like the worlds of music and acting are becoming more separated and more siloed, which is why, yeah, the crossover now maybe feels a little more dramatic than it maybe once did.
Yeah. It feels like it's a choice to like establish a new facet of the personality as opposed to like adapt the existing personality. You know, there's a reason we're not getting like Bruno Mars movies, you know, because that's not like, I mean, maybe someday Bruno Mars will, maybe he will be a serious actor, but like, I think to go back to the Harry Styles thing, it's like, it's telling that which type of roles he's chosen. Whereas he like, you know, 50, 60 years ago, he's exactly the type of pop star who was like, let's build a movie around his persona. Now, when he does movies, it's, you know, Dunkirk and Don't Worry, Darling and My Policeman and stuff that's clearly like working against the persona.
Yeah. And I kind of wish they would, because like the few videos I've seen of him perform, like, dude's got charisma. Like,
you can
build something around that for sure. I think the closest that I came across in my research of like, that modern equivalent that seems like it's maybe an extension of the persona would be like Adam Levine in Begin Again.
Okay. Yeah. Which I didn't
know. Okay. Like that movie. You said Adam Levine and my brain heard Adam Devine, and that's something else.
Yeah, not a singer.
Yeah, never mind. So going back,
right, back on track
before you derailed me, you maniacs.
That's why I like being the guest on these episodes.
Someone has to keep order. I would say, Barbara Streisand is a major one where that was kind of intertwined. Like, she started out as a nightclub singer, and I think she did always want to act. But yeah, they were definitely building movies around her. I mean, obviously they saw recently the challenge of like, you know, trying to put Funny Girl on Broadway and being like, ooh, how much of Funny Girl was Barbara Streisand? Like, can this show work with someone else? Turns out it can work with Lea Michele. Good for her. But like, she is obviously a force of nature, and they discovered that very quickly put her in Funny Girl. But even like, I mean, The Way We Were, Hello Dolly, I feel like is super underrated. I know at the time and even to this day, people complain that she's too young for that role. I don't care because I'm just like, I can't see anybody else. Like, it's just, it's too good.
Yeah, the movie's just a blast. But I mean, for me, definitely The Way We Were is like tops as far as Barbara goes. I mean, I like Yentl and I like the Hello Dolly and I even mostly like Funny Girl, the movie. But The Way We Were is like, she's really bringing it. And even a part, and it's one that doesn't at all rely on her persona or her star power. I mean, star power to an extent, but it's really a pure like acting job.
I mean, you're probably leaving out my personal favorite Babs role, which is What's Up, Doc?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I like that's my love What's Up, Doc, too. I'm just saying The Way We Were. That's okay. My shit.
I haven't seen it, so I'll put it on the list.
I would say, though, I feel like even if she's doing quote unquote real acting, it's hard not to think that she shaped those roles in some way.
Probably to an extent. But like The Way We Were was like an existing screenplay and it's based off like this guy's genuine love life story. So there was like a pre-existing thing. Whereas, yeah, a lot of the other roles do feel like they were more molded to her than like her coming to it.
Yeah. Even like later stuff, like I know I'm alone in this. I enjoyed The Guilt Trip, like her and Seth Rogen just bickering. No,
I mean, you and I have talked about this before. I also really like The Guilt Trip.
Because like that, her in that movie, like that's my mother. I was just like watching this movie and I'm like, this is a movie about my mother. But yeah, she just like, she's a singular presence. She really like, there's really no one like her, I think. And yeah. That's why she's an icon. Also in terms of people who are very unique, David Bowie.
I was going to bring him up because he seems like an example of like in his early roles, it's like there was a persona of David Bowie. So let's cast him as the man who like felt earth and like these and or in a more mainstream thing like Labyrinth, like he's this otherworldly character, but like over time he never like lost his weirdness, but he became more of a character actor, you know. Like I feel like we'll be mentioning The Prestige for 2 weeks in a row. His when he shows up as Nikola Tesla in Prestige, it could seem like stunt casting, but he's also really good. It's like my favorite part of the movie is him. And he seems like someone that someone initially thought like this would be a good persona to put in movies and then actually became a good actor.
But he never like
he always was.
He always plays someone who's sort of weird, right? Like that.
I was trying to find if there's a movie where he's not kind
he's
of weird.
Just like a divorced accountant. Like he's just, like he's always kind like, you know, in Hunger or no, The Hunger, he's like a vampire. Like there's always something that makes him kind of weird.
I guess like Last Temptation of Christ is like closer where you're like, I mean, yeah, he's Pontius Pilate, which is a notable figure in the story. But he is also just like some guy to a degree.
But if that's the closest he gets to Pontius Pilate is the closest he gets to playing a normal guy. Like, you know,
What about, I mean, it's not, what about Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence? That's, I mean,
yeah,
he's like he's not like supposed to be a weirdo in that movie. He's
right.
Obviously, no, I wouldn't call him a normal guy either, but it's not like, look at this weirdo.
Alternate title of the movie, Look at This Weirdo.
But yeah, that's a great movie, by
the way. Oh, for sure.
I think that's just somebody who like they couldn't make him play just a totally like what would be the point, I guess, of getting David Bowie and making him play a totally normal guy.
I think this is getting off topic, but I remember reading an interview with Willem Dafoe where the interviewer pointed out how often like Willem Dafoe is like on the one hand known for playing like, you know, crazy over the top weirdos, but also has more often than you think played just like totally normal guys. Like in American Psycho, he's just like the milquetoast like detective. And so maybe one of those Willem Dafoe roles could have gone to David Bowie in another life, in another world.
Could be. Also
imagine David Bowie is the motel manager in the Florida Project.
I think he would just like take the swans in as like his pets.
He's like too spooky. I don't know.
Willem Dafoe's pretty spooky.
Willem Dafoe Yeah, but not, he's not Bowie spooky.
Okay.
Bowie, David Bowie had a pupil that was permanently dilated. Did you know that? That's why his eyes are weird. It's like, that's not a, no. But also a somewhat more normal guy from that era, but there's, I guess, a Nicholas Rogue connection. Art Garfunkel was in some movies in the 70s, and he was pretty good.
Yeah, have I seen anything besides Colonel Knowledge?
Bad Timing.
Yeah, Bad Timing. He's good in that.
Yeah. Part of me, I don't know what compelled him to get into acting, but that does almost feel a little bit to me of just like a weird drug feels 70s. Like, hey, should I be in a movie? Like,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is kind of funny because I know like he and Paul Simon had like several long outs for several reasons. One of which is that like Art Garfunkel just had more like natural singing talent than Paul Simon could ever conjure. And Paul Simon was like intensely jealous of this. And similarly, like it's hard pressed to think of a guy who tried less on screen, but like could get away with more than just like Art Garfunkel showing up in these movies and just like being kind of just like a normal plain white guy, but like kind of being really great at that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nicholas Rogue also cast Mick Jagger in Performance.
Yeah. I thought of Jagger too. I haven't seen Performance, but,
oh, it's really good.
I did see, what was that weird movie he was just in like a couple of years ago?
Oh, The Burnt Orange Heresy.
Yeah. That like randomly Jagger is just like this rich eccentric guy. Hmm. Jumping off the Barbra Streisand thing though, Kris Kristofferson, her co-star in the 70s version of A Star Is Born, which is still the only Star Is Born I've not seen.
Gotta collect them all. They're like Pokemon. Yeah.
But
it's definitely the worst one though.
That's what people say, but yeah. I don't know. I like Kristofferson a lot.
I've seen all the A Star Is Borns that are called that. I've never seen What Price Hollywood.
Well, Price Hollywood's fine.
But yeah, A Star Is Born 76 is pretty bad. But Kris Kristofferson's good in a lot of stuff, not least of which Blade and Blade 2.
Most obviously. I was going to go with Alice Doesn't Live Anymore, same. But that was just me. Although, like, for 70s vibes of just, like, casting it, musicians and purely getting vibes, Tulane Blacktop with Dennis Wilson and James Taylor, all vibes. James Taylor going like, make it 300. What is that friggin' line where he's like, make it 3 yards and you got to race, motherfucker. Coolest moment on screen ever.
I feel like you need to standardize, like in much the way that like Roger Ebert had thumbs up and hummed in, I feel like you need to standardize your vibes ranking.
It's really true.
Because like
it's getting to a point where
like the vibes ranking, it just seems to be like becoming more prominent. So I'd love to see that standardized in some way.
Well, vibes cannot be standardized. It's
that's the problem. That is the problem.
Before we leave Kris Kristofferson, I also want to mention Lone Star and how good he is in Lone Star.
I still need to see like most John Sayles movies.
Well, Lone Star, I would say put it near the top. That's that one. They couldn't be more different, but that and Brother from Another Planet are like maybe my two favorite John Sayles. But yeah, that's completely different movies.
That's the beauty of John Sayles.
Yeah.
Also, I have not seen as much of this person's filmography as I would like to, but Dolly Parton in 9 to 5 is a damn delight. I should probably get deeper into the filmography.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen like Rhinestone.
Yeah.
I was trying to think if I've seen other things by
Bessel her. Whorehouse.
Yeah. That's what I'm trying to look at.
I haven't seen Bessel or Whorehouse.
She hasn't been in a ton of stuff, admittedly.
But 9 to 5 is almost enough to like build a legacy on.
Magnolias. I never saw that.
Didn't see Gnomeo and Juliet. Didn't see Frank McCluskey CI. What are all these movies?
What are these?
According
movies?
To, I guess she was in the Beverly Hillbillies movie. I don't remember. I saw it once. Oh, she plays herself, of course.
Oh, sure.
Classic.
So, yeah. I saw that when I was a kid.
I mean, obviously, like, we are not here to debate if Dolly Parton has star power. Like, she...
No.
But I think what's interesting about her role in 9 to 5 is she was obviously a huge star at that point, but she's not playing that. Like, she's playing, like, a normal person, kind of.
Yeah, she's huge star enough to put it all away.
Yeah, but you're still... But she's still deeply compelling.
Yeah.
And she still is, like, charismatic, but you're not really, like, that's Dolly... I mean, you are, but you're, like, she is seeming like a normal person.
Yeah, there aren't a lot of public people who are as much themselves as Dolly Parton is Dolly Parton. So it is hard to get away from that.
Yeah. Also, well, this was a weird one because it spans a lot of eras, but our recently dearly departed Meatloaf dabbled on the screen a little bit.
I've never seen Rocky Horror, but I mean, he's good in Fight Club.
Yeah, he's great in Fight Club.
He's good as Jack Black's dad in Tenacious D and The Pick of Destiny.
I forgot about that movie. I'm trying to think what else I've seen with him in it. I saw...
The Celebrity Apprentice.
No. Let's see. Yeah. Focus. That's not a great movie, to be honest. Not the Will Smith Focus.
I was going to say, not that one.
The William H. Macy Focus was a movie about William H. Macy plays a guy who gets new glasses that make everyone think he's Jewish.
Wait.
Are you like compressing it too much? I feel like there's words missing for that to make sense.
I feel like this has to be the rest of this episode.
Okay. The tagline is everything is about to become very clear.
Is it?
In the waning months of World War II, a man and his wife are mistakenly identified.
World War II, that's helpful context.
Are mistakenly identified as Jews by their anti-Semitic Brooklyn neighbors. Suddenly the victims of racial persecution, they find themselves aligned with a local Jewish immigrant in a struggle for dignity and survival. Okay, this description doesn't mention the glasses. But that's why it's called Focus.
Clearly the most important part.
Hold on. Yeah. I'm trying to see.
How does Meatloaf fit into this?
He's one of the anti-Semitic neighbors.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're forgetting Meatloaf's most impactful role in our lives, which is in Wayne's World.
Who is he in Wayne's World?
He's the bouncer at the club when they're going to see the bands, and he tells them that the shitty Beatles suck.
Yeah, they suck. So it's not just a clever name.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. How could I forget that that's Meatloaf?
But it's almost like, I mean, he does play very different roles in all of these things, but it's almost amazing that he can play not even a normal, but just anything in the zip code of a normal person, given his music. I guess it's just, what else do you do with him? Like, he's just so out there.
Yeah, you know? I mean, his role in... from what I gather, Rocky Horror or in Tenacious D are probably the closest to like matching the musical persona. But yeah, it is funny how often he just shows up as like some dumpy guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. At least the Wikipedia plot description of Focus confirms. Yes. Lawrence buys a new pair of eyeglasses that people around him say make him look Jewish when he wears them.
All right. Much anyway. To digest.
Yeah, Tyler and I watched that movie together on DVD in our first apartment when it first came out.
I think I misunderstood what you said, and I thought you were saying that he wears glasses that make everyone else look Jewish.
I heard the same thing, actually.
I was like, what does that even mean?
So it's like They Live, but yeah.
But for Jews.
Oh God, we're killing David. Oh God.
Yeah.
Weird pivot. Tom Waits is a cool guy who's in a lot of cool movies.
Maybe like the best example of like the successful transition, right?
It almost Frank feels Sinatra? Like he has just like, yeah, but it almost feels like he does have just like two different careers. Like it doesn't, like, I feel like you could not be a fan of Tom Waits music and be like, oh, Tom Waits, the actor. Like you would know him because he shows up often enough and is memorable enough and anything, you know, from Dracula to The Old Man and the Gun. What else? Mystery Man.
Not by Law.
Yeah, all the Jarmusch stuff. I was looking at his filmography and I was like, does he ever like act, or is it more just he has a screen persona? Like, I'm genuinely asking. I wasn't sure, you know?
Yeah, I was intrigued actually because Gus Van Sant wanted him to play the lead in Drugstore Cowboy, but no one would finance it. And so I was curious. I don't think I've seen him like have like a lead role. Like Down by Law is close, but he's not kind of like exactly the fulcrum of the movie. Because he does tend to show up as just like the weirdest guy in the room kind of thing.
But I don't know. I mean, like, I think you may be undervaluing what he does in those roles.
Oh, I don't think I'm undervaluing it at all. I'm just noting the archetype.
Yeah, no, it's
because
great.
I feel like it's not yeah. He's not like, even when he is playing a weird guy, it's not superficial.
Oh, of course.
Oh, no.
Like, I think he's really
a weird guy.
Yeah.
He's really effective in The Ballad of Buster Scruggs and Shortcuts. Yeah. The aforementioned Old Man and the Gun. I thought he was very good in that.
Even being in Licorice Pizza for like 2 minutes.
I did forget about Buster Scruggs, which is probably like the closest I've seen to him having like a lead role, because he is like the only guy on screen for that whole section.
Yeah.
And he's great. That's my favorite section of the movie for sure. I of course have to mention that he shows up and just yells at the sky in Domino, because Domino rocks.
Haven't seen it since it was new to DVD. Should probably watch it again.
We all should.
Yeah. But Tom Waits was definitely on my list to bring up, but it sounds like you're touching on most of mine.
Hermit Bob in The Dead Don't Die, the most Tom Waits role.
Hermit Bob.
Also from this era, since I guess we were sort of into the 80s, a very divisive one, Madonna.
Yeah.
I was trying to think if I like Madonna as an actress.
Nobody
I don't think
knows.
I do.
Nobody knows. I think it really, she did a lot of big swings. She did a lot of big swings and they didn't all work. I think it's like, because I've never seen Evita, but I think the consensus is like that was a bad call all around. Or
I haven't seen it, so I couldn't tell you.
I think the times that she doesn't stray too far from herself can go okay. Like, I think we can probably all agree on A League of Her Own.
Their own.
What did I say?
Her own.
It's her only. She is the only one. She owns the league.
More than one. You're really. That that's like the closest I can think of to her like being really good in a movie. I mean, I know a lot of people love Desperate Singing Susan. I think it's fine. But
I'm in the camp of people who love that movie. But also, she's not much of a character in the movie. The whole point is that she sort of like represents Rosanna Arquette's like ideal like break from suburban housewifeness or whatever. So she's playing like the Madonna figure, not the Madonna figure, but she's playing a version of herself, because that's what the movie needs her to be, and she's great at it, and I love that movie. But I don't know, that feels more like just good casting in terms of like what she already represents than it is a great performance.
So
I haven't seen a lot of her movies. I've never seen Evita, but
and then like Dick Tracy, she's like sort of interesting.
She's interesting in it. It'd be interesting to see a better actress in it.
I
mean, I definitely remember thinking she was very sexy when I was a kid.
Well, in
Dick Tracy.
Scrolling through her filmography, I'm deeply intrigued by why she's the executive producer on both Agent Cody Banks movies.
Wow.
I'm deeply looking forward to the movie she's directing about herself. I think that has all the promise in the world to be something I absolutely want to see. Mm-hmm. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah. And then I, of course, just have to mention Body of Evidence, where she fucks a guy to death, because that comes up a lot these days.
How many times are you like getting paid to like mention this movie on this podcast?
More than it made at the box office. Zing!
real topical on time. Yeah.
That hot Body of Evidence material that people want.
But that does feel like her, like, that does feel like almost the last gasp of like this new artist is a star. We have to like get her in a like in kind of the old sense that we were talking about. Right.
Yeah. But I think she was more desperate to get herself in movies than anyone else, because like, I mean, you can tell in her music videos that she loved old Hollywood and loved the idea of movies and stuff. And I think part of the problem she runs into as an actress is that she wants to be there so badly that, she never really feels at ease on screen, except like in A League of Her Own, where she feels very natural.
Well, sorry to jump ahead, but what do you guys think of Lady Gaga as an actress? Because it seems like that's kind of a dig I've heard against her too, that she like wants too badly to be to be seen as an actress?
I figured out how I feel about Lady Gaga because like as an actress. So I saw her in A Star Is Born. I loved her in that. And then I saw House of Gucci and I was like, I don't know, but I figured out the difference. So Lady Gaga is like maybe the most earnest person who has ever walked this earth. it just permeates everything. Like she was a guest judge on RuPaul's Drag Race. And when the queens walk down the runway on Drag Race, all the judges like have little like catty or pithy comments about their outfits. Lady Gaga, I'm sure, has seen the show. I'm sure she knows this. And yet when she was a guest judge, they would just walk out and she would be like, this look is beautiful. And it reminds me of something I wore 10 years ago. And they're just, it's like, she can't, she's so earnest. It's like to a fault. And I think that works in A Star Is Born. Like she is just laying it all out there. She's just being vulnerable and honest and earnest. But then like when she has to play like a catty, cold person, I feel like that doesn't work because she can't get there. She is so earnest.
But I like her in House of Gucci a lot.
Yeah, I'm also a House of Gucci fan. So you're swimming upstream here. But of course, we have to ask, does Lady Gaga count as a musician turned actor? Because of course, she was on that episode of The Sopranos as one of AJ's friends when they broke into the school and threw shit in the swimming pool before she was had a career as a musician. So really, that's where she started.
That's where that was. Don't forget your beginnings, Lady Gaga.
Yeah. The Sopranos season 3, episode 9, The Telltale Musadel. I did look up season 3, episode 9, but I just want to know, I want everyone to know for the record that I would have been able to name the episode without looking it up. I just wanted to look up where it fell in the order.
Great clarification. The people needed it.
But yeah, it does seem like she's maybe at an interesting point where like, well, she's going to be Harley Quinn. That'll be something.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the next Joaquin Phoenix Joker.
Phoenix Joker.
Oh.
Breaking news. You heard it here last.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah. But I don't know. It seems like she's clearly a talented person. She's clearly a passionate person. I'm not trying to write her off. I think she's got something. I mean, obviously she does. She's Lady Gaga. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see where it goes. Because in my mind, we got a hit and a miss. So I think she was supposed to be in Bullet Train. She was supposed to be Sandra Bullock's role, which is mostly a voice role. You know, which would have been interesting. But
no, it wouldn't. It wouldn't have been. There's nothing about that movie that is interesting. Yeah, I don't think there's any way to
hard
say
to make that interesting. Kind of on the same continuum, though. I haven't seen that many. I think the only Debbie Harry movie I've seen is Videodrama.
Are there that many?
Yeah, it turns out a lot.
Wow. Okay.
I'm scrolling through, and she was in.
Well, I know you're a James Mangold guy. Have you not seen Heavy?
I've not seen Heavy. I have seen Copland though, but I don't remember her in it. It looks like
I also don't remember her in Copland.
She's billed as Dolores the bartender, which does not sound like, you know, a prominent role in a movie that has a lot of people in it. But no, I haven't seen Heavy.
Also, just looking at the Heavy cast list, her character's name in Heavy is also Dolores, so I wonder if it's like a little cameo, like nod. Heavy's a good movie.
Yeah, it sounds like it. It sounds like it was good enough for him to suddenly get to work with everybody in Copland. So must have made a mark. But she's good in Videodrome for that matter. I mean, she's totally like this spaced out kind of, I don't know, video zombie kind of woman. But she's super compelling.
Oh, she's also in a really fun, Tales from the Dark Side, the movie, which is like a 80s like horror anthology movie. But she stars in the like wraparound, like connective thing that's in between everything, where she plays a seemingly a picture perfect suburban housewife woman, but who has kidnapped a small child with the intention of cooking him for dinner for her dinner party. And the kid is like keeping her from killing him by telling her horror stories. And that's like how you get in and out of each story.
Somehow I can buy Debbie Harry as like a weird cannibal murderess, but I can't buy her as a suburban housewife.
I think that's like a bit of stunt casting, I think.
Yeah.
You know, because the movie like opens with like, it's Debbie Harry, but she's like in her like perfect, you know, serial mom outfit, like at the grocery store picking up
children.
Well, yeah. Well, no, I think she's already I think, as I recall, I've seen this movie multiple times. It's a fun movie. Okay. You know who else is in that movie, who maybe is on your list, is Buster Poindexter, which is not his real name, but what is his real name? Why am I drawing a blank on David Johansen?
I don't even think I know who this person is.
Oh, okay. Well, David Johansen was in a band called the New York Dolls, and then he had a musical sort of persona called Buster Poindexter, but he's also an actor. You might know him. I would say people our age probably remember him from Scrooged. He's the ghost of Christmas Past, the taxi driver.
Okay.
If you were in Scrooged.
Yeah.
So he's another like kind of like Tom Waits, in that he's this sort of like 70s, 80s musician, but who was like, whose persona was already kind of like a throwback. He showed up in some movies, and in Tales from the Dark Side, he plays a hitman who gets killed by a demonic cat.
It's really good. It's a good movie. When that happens.
Right on.
So I wanted to bring up Bette Midler, and then I was horrified to realize I've barely seen any of her movies, but I feel like she must go mentioned.
I'm in the same boat, unfortunately.
David.
I've seen Beaches.
All right.
What else was she?
Well, Hocus Pocus,
Seinfeld.
The Rose, First Wives Club. Yeah, but I feel
like, Seinfeld, she played herself, so I feel I feel like those don't count.
No.
Okay. Beaches. Did you ever see Big Business? I like that movie.
No.
Big Business is a movie that's directed by Jim Abrahams from Zucker Abraham Zucker, but it's just Jim Abrahams. And the premise is that Bette Midler, there are two Bette Midlers and two Lily Tomlins in the movie. And like the beginning of the movie in like the 50s, this like rich family is like on the countryside, and then the wife goes into labor and they go to this country hospital, and the same time there are two sets of twins born, but like the two of them get switched. So there's like a Bette Midler and a Lily Tomlin who live in the country and are poor, and the Bette Midler and Lily Tomlin who live in the city and are rich, but they're actually twins and don't know it, and they meet each other in the city. It's a fun throwback farce. That has a really good cast. In addition to that, it's got Fred Ward and Edward Herman and some other people. I like that movie.
Nice.
Big Business.
So I have the
Blu-ray. If you ever want to borrow a Blu-ray, I will happily lend it to you.
Well, if it comes with a slipcover, I might fail you again.
Inside joke.
Obviously, Bette Midler doesn't need our stamp of approval. She's clearly a multi-hyphenate icon at this point, and I feel bad I haven't seen more things with her in it, but Bette Midler, if you're listening, I'm sorry. So now we're sort of moving into the late 80s, early 90s, and I have to mention Marky Mark.
Hell yeah.
It's weird now, because I think that's another case where like the music career, it's very rearview mirror.
Yeah. I remember like, because I only ever knew him as an actor, but even when I was like coming up as a cinephile, he was still like somewhat referred to as Marky Mark, or at least like being like,
not in a dismissive way, but
almost like he has since transcended, right. But it always kind of used it as a touchstone, the same way that like we just saw Hustle last night, which rocks. And the person moderating the Q&A had to do that dumb thing with Adam Sandler, be like, we all understand you're a good actor now. It's like, yeah, we've understood that for long enough that you don't need to point it out again and again. But that also held on to Mark Wahlberg for a little too long.
Yeah. And it's like, you said something, I think it was you who said this about Mark Wahlberg, that I always think about. You're like, the thing that makes him interesting is whether he's in a drama or a comedy, he's acting exactly the same.
Yeah.
And it works.
When he has a good director. I mean, I think he's unusually susceptible to how good his director is in terms of how good he is on screen. But every time he's been good in a movie, it's because he's been like fully earnest and fully like committed to the bit, whatever the bit is, whether it's serious or comedic.
Yeah.
I'm older enough than you that I definitely remember, Marky Mark and the Funky Punch. And I remember the I think the Basketball Diaries was the first one. It was like, oh, Marky Mark's like in a movie.
Right.
Then he very quickly sort of just became an actor. And now no one talks about his career anymore. It's real quick, though, I want to tell you. Just to relate a little story, which is that Natalie and I were in Hawaii recently, and we were staying in like the tourist area of Waikiki. We had gone like walked into the city to go get some like authentic like shave ice at this place that's supposed to be like the best shave ice. And then we were walking from there. We were going to go on this like sunset booze cruise thing. So we're walking. So we're doing a lot of walking is the point. And Natalie's shoes, she started to get a blister. So we like stopped into like a CVS and got some Band-Aids, and she was like, I just need to sit down somewhere and put these Band-Aids on my feet. And so we went into a Wahlburgers in Honolulu to sit down and just like have a little drink and rest our feet. And, it was the first time I've ever been to a Wahlburgers. And they have like posters for like, Marky and Donnie movies and TV shows all over the place, but there's not a lot of references to Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch there.
I always have to, because I've never been to a Wahlburgers either. I always have to remind myself that it's a real restaurant,
right?
And like a Saturday Night Live sketch that we all just reference frequently.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I had never been before.
It doesn't seem real.
And I didn't. I can't tell you how the burgers were. We literally just like sat down and like ordered a drink to kill 20 minutes.
As we get more into the 90s, we get a lot of rappers turned actors. Another obvious example is Will Smith.
Yeah.
Who like it's really hard not to view him through the slap lens now, but cause really like the slap in some ways it epitomizes so much weirdness that had been building for so long. Like people who didn't maybe know as much about him and just thought he freaked out one night. It's like, no, like he and Jada like built a weird Scientology school for kids. And like, he's been like acting weird. And there was like the open relationships and the, like, there's been a big history of weird. And it's like, I can tolerate a Scientology actor, but it's like, are they fun crazy or not fun crazy? Cause I feel like Tom Cruise is fun crazy.
Yeah, I think Tom Cruise is probably secretly evil to depths that we cannot imagine.
Let me rephrase, because I realize that is confusing. Compelling to watch crazy versus uncompelling to watch crazy.
But for most of his career, like when Will Smith was on, man, that's as good as it got.
But I guess
I've always liked him as a movie star.
Yeah.
But is it weird now that like, because do you look back on it and you're like, it doesn't play as well because there's dead-eyed crazy in there or no?
But that's the same thing with Tom Cruise. I mean, go back and watch any old Tom Cruise movie. He's got dead-eyed crazy.
But in the compelling way.
my hot take on this situation is that I am less concerned about the slap than it's practically a non-event to me. I don't care that much.
I mean, I don't think it like reshaped the world. I'm saying strictly in terms of Will Smith. I mean, I don't know. His career will probably never be the same. I think,
I think my argument is that we, you know, as educated, bougie, white hipster, you know, types, are maybe a little insulated in our intellectual middle-class lives. And I think the number of people for whom what Will Smith did doesn't seem that out of line is probably way bigger than we're giving it credit for.
Oh, sure. I mean,
I don't know how much it's going to impact his career long-term.
Well, I think long-term, maybe not, but I think short-term, you'll just have a dearth of people wanting to work with him.
That's it.
And yeah, I think in like 5 years, I mean, maybe even this year, because he has a movie coming out this year that they're at least making a modest push for. But I would say certainly in like 5-10 years, like, yeah, he's going to make something that people will be like, this is the comeback. This is the Will Smith we all love. And we'll all forget about it. And that'll be that. Because fundamentally, I mean, like we're saying, he is a great movie star, even though, I mean, it's been a while since, I mean, I love Gemini Man, but it's been a while since he's had something that really like reminded us how good he is, kind of thing.
Because like, I did not care for King Richard and I did not care for him in it.
Yeah, I didn't care for King Richard either. What does he have coming out this year?
What's Emancipation, which I've heard from some inside sources. Apparently, Apple is just kind of trying to release it quietly into the night because, like, they can't have him do press for it. And, like, he's banned from the Oscar. Like, what are they going to do? You know?
Ridiculous.
But
Sorry, I'm looking at trying to figure out what was the last thing he was that I saw that I thought was really great because I didn't see. What was the one you liked? Gemini Man.
Pretty solid.
Oh, well, I mean, longtime listeners of this podcast know that I am nuts about the first 60 minutes or so of I Am Legend.
Well, yeah, but that was
before it becomes a different movie. But that's, I mean, that's 15 years ago and that's probably the last. Yeah, like, wow. Yeah. But I Am Legend, man, that movie's so good for really the majority of it.
Yeah.
It's kind of disappointing where it goes. But anyway, back to the topic at hand.
So yeah, if you want to pivot to less problematic people or less controversial people.
Well, are we still on rappers?
I guess it doesn't have to strictly be that.
But because we didn't talk about Tupac Shakur, who obviously for very sad reasons doesn't have a lot of credits, but was clearly making a name for himself as an acting talent, not just a rapper who could star in movies. I know Poetic Justice and Juice. But I think, did either of you ever see Gridlocked?
No.
That is a great movie. Tyler and I are both big fans. It's a Battleship Retention favorite. That's kind of a dark comedy where Tupac and Tim Roth play drug addicts who are trying to go clean, and the movie is like kind of a farce in a way, but also a very like R-rated, you know, drug addict movie at the same time, and it like really like walks that line very, very carefully. And Tupac is not only great in it, he's also really funny in it. And like, it was one of the last things he made, sadly, but really showed, like, I think he had a lot more to show us as an actor. It's very sad. Obviously Tupac's death is sad, but yeah. If you take anything away from this episode, it's check out Gridlocked. Really good movie.
Also included in the cast, the aforementioned John Sayles.
Yeah.
As cop.
Yeah.
Also a rapper from this era, Queen Latifah. We saw Hustle last night, so we were just talking about her and how she's had an interesting career. She started out as a rapper, became an actress, became an R&B singer, and then acted more. Like, it's just been this kind of like weird trajectory, but she's obviously very talented at a lot of things. And I know Chicago was obviously a huge turning point for her. I think she was Oscar nominated for that. Huge presence on screen, obviously. And then Hairspray, a similar thing where they're adapting a musical and she gets a showy part in it. Yeah, she's great. She was in Hustle, and she and Adam Sandler playing a married couple is delightful. He was at a Q&A and he just kept calling her the queen, which was very charming. But yeah, I feel like what is she mostly thought of as now, an actress? Probably.
Good question.
Because she has that show on CBS or whatever, The Equalizer. Like, she does all of it. Yeah,
that's true.
She's all over.
I feel like someone in a similar vein to her, and not just because they were in a movie together, but Common, who we were talking about before this, we started recording, as just like, he's just like a regular actor now. He just like shows up and things. Like, he's not really especially notable for any reason. He just like steadily arrives and does pretty solid work.
But has he ever been a lead?
I don't think so.
I am not really a big fan of Common as an actor, to be honest.
But I'm almost saying, like, how would you even be a fan or not fan of him? He's just like, he's serviceable and he basically does the job.
Yeah, he shows up in small roles and plays normal people. And I'm like, where, like,
but I'm surprised that's what I think. I don't buy him as a normal person. I like him in the John Wick movies when he's not supposed to be normal, you know, like, because Common cuts a very striking figure. And so I think using his look and his physicality and especially like that huge fight at the beginning of John Wick 2, when that ends with them like crashing through the like Rome, into the lobby of the Rome like outpost of the Continental, and then sitting down and having a drink together. That's so cool. But like seeing him play a regular guy in like, what's the Laura Dern movie? It's called The Tale.
Yeah.
Oh, right. I totally forgot he was in that.
Yeah. He's the husband or boyfriend or something like that. Or like, you know, The Hate You Give, where he's the uncle. I just don't buy him as
I forgot he was. This is the problem is we keep forgetting he's in these things. He's like not making an impact, I guess. And then I was like, oh, he was in Selma. And Scott was like, yeah, I remember that because he did the song. I'm like, yeah, you remember the song. Right. You don't remember him physically present.
Yeah. Okay. I was trying to think of the movie. It's unfortunately not very good, but the movie where he was a lead, it's called Love, L-U-V. Okay. And he plays, it's like a, oh, he's not the father. He's the uncle. So it's, oh, right. Okay. So he's a sort of ex-con spending the day with his nephew.
Okay.
Well, that sounds
unfortunately great. not great, but it's got him and Dennis Haysbert and Danny Glover. It's a good cast, but yeah. But he was a lead in that.
Okay. So he got out of the system, I guess. also kind of in this era, Tyrese Gibson, or just Tyrese, if you want. I realized in looking at this, I have never actually seen a Tyrese movie insofar as most of his filmography is Fast and Furious and or Transformers oriented. but if someone wants to...
I'm basically fine in the movies. Again, it's nothing really to write home about, but I think he has enough personality that comes through.
Yeah, I forget that he is a singer. Is that what he is? Or
he was an R&B singer. Music. He was an R&B singer in the, he has a new album out this year. So he never stopped. It was kind of, he started out as that and it's kind of always been interwoven. Yeah.
No, he's in two movies that I've seen, both of which I like, John Singleton's Baby Boy, and John Singleton's underrated Four Brothers, also starring Mark Wahlberg, which is a remake of a Western, called The Four Sons of Someone or Other.
Baby Elder?
Yes. So it's a remake of that, but set in, I guess, then, I mean, this is 17 years ago, but then modern day Detroit, where four foster brothers all come back to avenge their mom's death. Cool movie, way underrated.
Right on.
Kind of also in this era... What else do I have here? Well, Justin Timberlake is a weird one where I feel like that's another maybe kind of last gasp of like, let's plug a pop star into movies.
But I think for a period there, he really wanted to be an actor and it just didn't quite seem to work out for him.
But he has the goods, I think.
Yeah, I think generally speaking.
I hear an asterisk.
You know, I just think he's always a little desperate. And I think like it worked in The Social Network. But beyond that,
Friends with Benefits. I feel like
he's fine.
Okay.
I have to agree with Scott that I think he wants to be, he wants it too bad in some ways. He was in a movie just last year called Palmer. It was really bad.
You can definitely feel the wanting it too bad. Like Black Snake Moan, where he's really just like, trying to be this grungy guy. And it's like, you're Justin Timberlake, man.
Yeah. But he's good in movies where he's good.
Yeah. I mean, he's great in Social Network because Fincher can kind of like,
but also
Llewyn Davis? Really well.
Inside Llewyn Davis and Wonder Wheel. I mean,
Yeah. I mean, he's like, he doesn't really have a lot to do in Llewyn Davis. Like he pretty much has to show up.
Do you think he's still trying to make a go of it? Or, well, I mean, you know, he's in that movie. Like I said,
he was in Palmer last year.
Yeah.
He's got, apparently there's a Trolls 3 coming.
Well, those Trolls, I mean, yeah, he's going to do those till he dies. I'm not counting voice work. That's something else. What else? Also, pop stars of that era, Beyonce. Beyonce is maybe kind of a mixed bag in the acting department.
Most notable in Austin Powers and Goldmember, of course.
Yeah, that didn't go super well.
No, I mean, she's like fine in Dreamgirls, obviously not the most notable part, but I think she does the job well enough. I remember some of the press at the time noting that she had to sing worse than she could because the whole point is that she's not like the best singer of the trio. What other movies has she even been in though?
Cadillac Records.
Obviously.
There was Obsessed, but I never saw it.
Yeah.
Second week in a row that's come up because we were talking about Obsession last week. So I mentioned Obsessed, but who was, well, she just did a voice for the quote unquote live action Lion King.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I say just, that was what, 3 years ago now.
The Pink Panther.
Wait, she was in the Pink Panther, the,
yeah.
Oh, I didn't see that one. Anyway, no, I can't. Never mind. I can't. Who was the actor who was? Was it Lakeith Stanfield who was like publicly like, Beyonce's not a good actor. I love Beyonce, but she shouldn't be in The Lion King. She's not good at, a good actor.
I don't remember this, but props.
It just feels like Lakeith Stanfield because he seems like someone who doesn't like hold back.
Yeah, yeah. No, she really hasn't been in many things. I think she has maybe decided it's not for her. She's like, I'm Beyonce. Why do I got to mess with
this?
Yeah,
right.
Like, what does she have to gain?
Yeah.
Like, unless she decides she's really hunting for an Oscar. She was in Carmen, a hip hopera, which I did watch at the time it aired on MTV. that was a cultural event at the time.
Sure.
Take my word for it. But again, yeah, very music heavy, obviously. Also kind of going into the aughts, Mandy Moore.
Yeah. I'll give a shout out to Mandy Moore. I'll give a shout out to Crying Like a Baby at A Walk to Remember. I'm not afraid.
I was thinking more of Saved. She's pretty funny in Saved.
She is pretty funny in Saved.
Oof.
I mean, it's a rough movie, but I think,
yeah, I didn't like that movie. So I don't really,
I think she's solid in it.
Yeah. I can't speak
to what I've seen her in.
I can't speak to This Is Us. I know she's very beloved there.
Right.
Yeah. She's in a lot of bad movies, though. Because I Said So, How to Deal, Saved.
She's, yeah. It kind of fizzled out.
Chasing Liberty. That was a bad movie.
Yeah.
American Dreams, Rough Sledding.
Never saw that one.
Oh, Southland Tales, also starring Justin Timberlake. Just kind of
wait,
a hot,
who is she in Southland Tales?
That's a great question. She's credited as Madeline Frost Santeros, but I have zero memory of that role. But I only saw the movie like the weekend it came out with three other people or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember she had a really good episode of Mark Maron's podcast, actually, where she talked about the fact that she like kind of fell into singing because like it just seemed like the right fit at the time, but she never really felt comfortable in that era and just like, she would watch Britney Spears and be like, oh, that's someone who is supposed to be doing this job. I'm not supposed to be doing this job.
Oh.
And she kind of like felt more comfortable as an actress.
Okay. Okay.
Is that making you question some things about Mandy Moore and possibly your life?
Maybe. I don't know.
I mean, she just put out two new albums, so maybe she's kind of like pivoted, but those were her first albums in 10 years.
So I'm still looking at the Southland Tales cast. So Holmes Osborne's character's name is Senator Bobby Frost. So my guess is that she's his daughter.
Sounds about right.
But she was so young when she started too. She was like 15.
Totally.
She was like so young.
She played herself on Entourage.
Oh, really? How deep in?
Well, I only watched the first four seasons. So within that, okay. But as I recall, the premise was that Adrian Grenier's character, Vince, had a small part in A Walk to Remember, and they'd had like an onset romance, and then she like comes back into his life in like season three or four or whatever, and they like maybe like spark things up again. That seems to be, that's my memory of the storyline with her.
I don't remember this at all. It's hard for me to totally hold a grudge against Entourage, partially because of the entire Aquaman story with actually casting James Cameron, I think is pretty great overall. And because they gave us I Am Queens Boulevard, which is still like such a great, like iconic fake Sundance movie. And in something that's been parodied a lot, I don't think anyone's done as good as Entourage did.
Not enough to make me go back and watch the other four seasons or the movie.
No, certainly not.
But yeah,
but
I watched four seasons. That's,
it was pretty addictive for a good stretch there.
I remember in college, I was taking sign language classes just as like an elective. And one of our assignments was we had to watch an episode of TV on mute and see like what that experience was like and like write about it. So I picked Entourage because I had never seen it. So I watched an episode of Entourage on mute, no captions or anything. And even on mute with no captions, I was like, this show is really misogynist. That's as far as I got with that. Wasn't Mandy Moore also on Scrubs?
Yeah, she was on Scrubs. She was good on Scrubs.
Yeah. Who else? So obviously we talked about Beyonce. So we got to talk about Jennifer Hudson, obviously one of the more, I think, successful pivots of this type in recent years,
but also like not right. Cause it's like, she did Dreamgirls.
So she won the Oscar too early. Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, what else?
Yeah.
It, right.
Well, she did Respect. She did the Aretha Franklin movie and yeah. She clearly thought it would be something.
She's been in a ton of movies that nobody remembers. And we barely remember Dreamgirls.
Yeah. I think it all maybe happened too fast for her.
Yeah.
But she, I mean, she's clearly talented.
I mean, she's great in Dreamgirls. Like there's tons to like about her. It's just unfortunate. I mean, part of it is like, I think part of it is like systemic racism stuff. And it's the same reason that like, Halle Berry didn't really have like a better career after she won an Oscar or Lupita Nyong'o took like 6 years to get a role that was deserving of her talents kind of thing. It's just like, there's not like a good success metric for like continuing, especially Black women to like continue their careers after they've reached a certain peak.
I agree with your point in general, but I'm going to stir the pot a little bit. Can Halle Berry act?
I don't know, but I'm saying like most people, you win an Oscar, you start getting better offers, and she just didn't.
Maybe she can't act. Like I've seen Monsters Ball. She just screams but it the whole time.
But it doesn't matter if you can act or not. If you've won an Oscar, you get better offers and you get a couple years to prove that you can't act.
Well,
most people go through the cycle. Halle Berry did not.
Hey, fair enough.
Yeah. Well, I've seen Cloud Atlas and John Wick 3. So I say, yeah, she can act.
There you go.
Who else? So this is a more recent one, but Mary J. Blige was just like, I'm going to be in a movie. And she was in Mudbound and she was really good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
About that. So
played herself on an episode of Entourage.
David, unexpected Entourage scholar of the group.
Are you going to make like a special Patreon companion to this episode that's just the Entourage cameos?
Yeah. Oh, that'd be fun.
But yeah, and that was a weird one because she has been around a long time.
Yeah.
Like she like is very entrenched as a music artist and is older and then was just like, I'm going to be in a movie now. And then she got nominated for an Oscar.
In two different capacities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they said she was the first woman person to ever do that, which is insane.
Yeah. Because it's like, who would ever be nominated for supporting actress and song?
Yeah.
It's like the combination of those would be so unusual.
That's true. Yeah.
Speaking of like garnering acclaim and continuing a music career, like Janelle Monáe is on a good track right now to continue doing both very well.
Yeah, because what? There's Moonlight, Hidden Figures.
Yeah.
Well,
she did that. What was that like slavery movie?
Antebellum.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say, because she's also in Harriet. So I thought that's what you were referencing. I forgot about Antebellum.
Yeah, I was thinking of Antebellum, but I did forget about Harriet.
I would love to like see her in a larger role. I think she's been kind of these like well-positioned supporting characters.
No, she's the lead in Antebellum.
Well, careful what you wish for, I guess. she's in the new Knives Out. That's right.
There you go. That seems like a good vibe for her.
Lenny Kravitz is in movies. He was like in all the Hunger Gameses.
But what else?
And Precious. He was in Precious.
That's right. He was.
I think
Precious.
He may all have right. the common curse where we're just like, I guess he was there.
Sure.
I mean, he's always just kind of like very relaxed. He seems like a very relaxed guy. So maybe it's too relaxed and we all forget about it. I don't know.
Let's see. No, okay. Yeah. Hunger Games. He was in Zoolander.
Like the personal stylist,
I'm guessing probably as himself. A lot of people were in Zoolander as themselves. A whole lot.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. He was himself.
David Bowie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, Billy Zane, because there's that
of course.
Great line. Listen to your friend Billy Zane. Oh, he was in Lee Daniels, The Butler.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of movies everybody was in.
Yeah.
A movie with so many producers, they had to change the PGA rules because it was simply unacceptable. So, and then this is kind of a twofer, and it's a little more TV oriented, so sorry. But both Carrie Brownstein and Fred Armisen started firmly as musicians.
That's true, yeah.
Fred Armisen is the more surprised. Like, he was just a drummer for, like, the longest time. And then...
French Mouth.
Yeah, wow, that's impressive.
That was the name of his... That's the name of the band he was in. They were good.
Well, I learned that today from Wikipedia, but look at you. Yeah, and then he just kind of like found his way to SNL and kind of just started popping up in all these things. And then Carrie Brownstein really doesn't have that much other acting experience. I mean, she was in some stuff after Portlandia. She was in Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot, and like some other random stuff.
But Carol, the TV show.
She's in Carol at the very end.
Yeah. Carol. Yeah, apparently.
So briefly that it seemed to piss people off.
Well, they cut the role way down.
No, I know.
But I actually think she's like... Like, I've seen a fair amount of Portlandia, and I feel like she's, like, secretly a comic genius. Like, coming into the show, everyone's like, oh, Fred Armisen and Carrie Brown. But, like, to me, she's, like, the star of that. Mm. Like, she is so funny and just so weird and so specific. So I want her to be in more things. She's great.
Yeah, I've only seen her in minor roles from aging auteurs, where she does not get to shine as much.
Yeah. And then, like, sort of a weird one. Rihanna is like down.
Yeah, I put her down.
Battleship. What else?
Valerian and the City of 1,000 Planets.
Hell yeah! Oh,
I didn't see that, but I did.
Oh,
see...
man, Valerian freaking rocks.
She was at the Comic-Con, like, panel, and they showed some footage of her.
She's not in it that much, but she does like a sad striptease or something, right?
A sad shape-shifting striptease.
Yeah.
Like, what a cool movie.
And then she's in Ocean's 8.
Oh yeah. She played herself in This Is the End.
She slaps
Michael Cera across the face because he slaps her on the ass and like she is not taking it and slaps him across the face.
I feel like Rihanna is someone who's like, I don't know, is she too mysterious to act? Like, she's just like, she's a very enigmatic figure. And I feel like Beyonce sort of has this too, where like, I feel like they have kind of guarded personas and that's their prerogative. Like, they can be whoever they want. I just don't know if that opens them up to have the vulnerability to really put it all out there.
Yeah. I mean, that's why she's good as a shape-shifting sad striptease.
Well, yeah, but I'm just saying that may be the limit of, yeah. I mean, I don't know, you know, she's like fun in Ocean's 8, but she's playing a cool Rihanna type figure.
Very too cool for school in the Ocean's 8.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, they can do that, but you know, is she going to win an Oscar? I doubt it, but who knows? She may surprise us all. A very different type of persona. Awkwafina has decided to act and is pretty good at it.
Wasn't her like music career already kind of like a persona? Like, not, I guess they all are, but like it was a bit, right?
I don't know anything about her music career.
I mean, I know it's like comedically tinged, if that's what you mean. Are you saying she doesn't count? Or I guess what point are you making?
I guess I feel like both Awkwafina the rapper and Awkwafina the actor are extensions of Awkwafina the comedian.
Hmm. Okay.
I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Even like in The Farewell, where it's like a dramatic role.
Yeah, but she's still funny in it.
Yeah.
It is still kind of like fitting with her general vibe.
Yeah. Anyway, so I like her, but
yeah. I didn't say I didn't like her.
Okay.
I don't know if she can.
Leave Awkwafina alone. And then, we did touch on Harry Styles. That's, you know, obviously, like, he was in Dunkirk and that one pretty well. And then he was in Don't Worry, Darling and My Policeman this year. And people are like, ooh, we don't know how to feel about this. So, like, the jury is definitely out. I mean, the interest is there for sure. But yeah, I think he's like, he's maybe overthinking it is part of it.
It almost feels like he's underthinking
it. Oh, okay. Well, he gave all these weird interviews with My Policeman where he was like speaking to the queer experience and like all the and they're like, sit down, man. Like, get at, like, no.
But I do think there's him and Lady Gaga both have the thing when they're like interviewed about acting. I feel like they so desperately want to be taken seriously as actors that they lay it on too thick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Overcompensating, maybe. Yeah. And then like, this is maybe a little bit of a cheat because she's only been in one movie, but I got to shout out Alina. Oh my God. Alana Haim.
Certainly.
Yeah. I was going to, if you didn't, especially since we mentioned Licorice Pizza briefly earlier with, when we mentioned Tom Waits, but yeah.
Yeah. That to me, like, you know, that's like act like that. She was just like, I was sad. She didn't, I mean, I understand why she didn't maybe get more awards attention. It's a very abrasive and kind of confrontational role.
Yeah.
Not everyone loves annoying Jewish girls as much as Scott and I. So,
but also I wonder if there's like, I've complained before that a lot of like people who pick acting awards seem to have this rubric that has to do with like degree of difficulty. And so the fact that she's playing a character named Alana that was written for her, are there a lot of people watching going like, well, that's not acting, she's just being herself or whatever, because of this very superficial idea of what constitutes good acting.
Yeah, totally. It's like that gets back to the Marie Chevalier thing that we started out with. It's like, there's only certain things that are real acting, and the rest is just like showing up and hanging out and being yourself. I know. I mean, since we can get into the discards and random stuff we didn't get to the course of the episode, I mean, that was the same thing that Eminem got noticed for, or got kind of slight for 8 Mile, but he's great in 8 Mile. So like, screw those people.
But yeah, he also seems to have, I mean, there have been at least two other roles that he was wanted for that he turned down for various reasons. Really? Neil Blomkamp wanted him for Elysium before he cast Matt Damon. And I think,
weird pivot.
My understanding is Eminem was like, I will do it if you shoot the entire movie in Michigan, so I don't have to be away from my family, which, couldn't do. And then apparently Antoine Fuqua wanted to cast him in Southpaw, and ended up with Jake Gyllenhaal. But, yeah, I don't know if, I mean, Eminem, like, he played a version of himself. He played B-Rabbit. I don't know if he's the opposite of the other, like, musicians we're talking about. I don't know if he wants to be an actor.
Totally. It doesn't seem that way at all, which is fine. I just wish he would at least, I don't know. I guess I wish he convinced Neil Blomkamp to leave him in Detroit. Because at least, like, at least he was fine. I liked it about as well as District 9. But it would have been more interesting with Eminem in the role.
But do you think Eminem can play people other than himself?
But I think the role in Elysium is like so close to like at least the version of himself he played in 8 Mile like he could fit in there fine.
Yeah, I can see that.
Just scrolling through my list of people we didn't mention. I mean, we didn't spend that much time on Cher, but it is worth.
Oh, talking. Yeah. Like, what Cher happened? Oh, God.
I think Cher. We just kind of like accidentally breezed over, but Cher does kind of kick ass.
As we accidentally breeze over Cher, this is horrific oversight.
Well, this is, we know this is a, we are a trio who love mermaids.
Yeah.
As does my wife. And also I am, Moonstruck is one of my favorite rom-coms of all time.
Yeah. Moonstruck is solid, but it's really mermaids that is like, okay, I get it.
Yeah. And then like, I mean, Witches of Eastwick, right?
Yeah. She's getting that too.
That's when, how much is she losing herself in these roles versus just being Cher? I think it's kind of a hybrid.
I think she's bringing something for sure.
Yeah.
And it's not like, cause there's, I think her like musical persona is a little more of like the guarded kind of diva thing. Whereas like in Moonstruck or Mermaid, she's just like out there and wilding.
True. Or Mamma Mia 2.
Sure. If you say so.
Here we go again.
We didn't mention Jennifer Lopez, who kind of like came up as like a both.
Because I look, turns out like the singing happened after the acting, which
a little bit,
me.
They were a little bit in tandem from what I could tell.
Well, it said she did the Selena movie and then was like, I like singing. I guess I'll do an album.
Oh, all right.
But that was weird to me because I was thinking about Jennifer Lopez. And I'm like, Jennifer Lopez has had a very strange career.
Yeah.
Because she's not maybe that super good at any of the things she does, but she does a lot of things.
Sure.
Because, like, she's not a good singer. She's just not. And that's fine. But, and she's a pretty good dancer. Like, compared to some of her peers, I mean, like.
But Julie, she's got it.
I mean, that's the only explanation. And like,
I like Jennifer Lopez a lot. I'm always happy to see a movie with Jennifer Lopez in it.
Because, do you think she's a good actress?
She definitely can be.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely Out of Sight. I like, but that was not that recent. I'm trying to think what else.
Well, Out of Sight and Hustlers are kind of like the bookends people go to. And I'm like, okay, a stopped.
She's really good in Hustlers.
But like a stopped clock is right twice a day. Is it that? Or is it that she has untapped potential that has been abused this entire time? I don't know.
I feel like you're looking a gift horse in the mouth. We got Out of Sight and we got Hustlers. What do we need to complain about?
That's true.
Yeah. She was also in a movie called Second Act a few years ago. That was like a divorce lady rom-com.
I mean, we watched Marry Me, and she it was fascinating to watch her pretending to be someone pretend to be normal, because I'm like, when this, I was like, she probably relates to this because she probably doesn't know how to be normal anymore. And it's, I mean, the premise is that she's like dating Owen Wilson, who's just like a high school teacher or whatever, and like has to act normal. And I'm like, I don't know.
She's got Shotgun Wedding coming out.
Yeah.
Which I cannot wait for. I'm so excited.
But that's, I didn't realize, like, so the couple in that movie is her and Josh Duhamel, but it was originally supposed to be Armie Hammer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't, I only just recently learned that.
Yep.
Other assorted discards. Sharp pivot from Jennifer Lopez. Dwight Yoakam, very solid character actor in very many parts.
Yeah. Hold on. My AirPods just, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. And I can hear you too. Great. Yeah. I love, Dwight Yoakam, obviously, Sling Blade's a big one, but he also has a, small, but very memorable role in another Battleship Retention favorite movie, Red Rock West.
I've still never seen it.
It's so good. Cause it's a rural neo-noir, that also has this sort of like darkly comic premise where Nicolas Cage just wants to get out of town and keeps not being able to. And Dwight Yoakam plays a truck driver that Nicolas Cage tries to like stow away on the top of his semi as he's driving away, and it doesn't work out.
He's also solid in Panic Room, and he has by far the funniest scene in Logan Lucky.
Oh, right. Yeah, he's great in Logan Lucky.
Other discards. I don't think I've actually seen a movie where Bob Dylan does acting, but Bob Dylan has done a small chunk of acting. He was in
Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid.
Yeah, Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid. And then there was that movie that he wrote, Masked and Anonymous, which I've never seen. And also starred in
directed by Larry Charles.
I know, really directed by Larry Charles.
Yeah.
If you ever heard the genesis of that movie, it's crazy. Basically, like, Bob Dylan approached Larry Charles to make a movie because he really liked, I think, Larry Charles' work on Seinfeld or like something. He wanted to make an out and out comedy.
Yeah.
And so he brought like 150 pages of just loose leaf paper that he'd written on over the past like 20 years. And he was like, let's make something out of one of these. And like slowly got winnowed down to being this like musical drama kind of thing.
What else we have in the discard pile before we wrap up?
Yeah, I'm taking a look. Steven Van Zandt. From
of course,
freaking E Street Band, great.
Yeah, I mean, that's. I mean, has he? I guess I was going to say he's done anything but Sopranos, but of course, who could forget Lilyhammer?
Of course, we're all constantly thinking about Lilyhammer, and even if he'd only done the Sopranos, freaking great on the Sopranos.
Was he in that other movie though? The
yep.
No.
Are you thinking of Rhinestone? Oh, he wasn't in Rhinestone.
Stop. No, I'm not thinking of that, but it says he was in The Irishman.
Oh, yeah, he was in The Irishman.
Who was he in The Irishman?
You know, some guy.
Jerry Vale?
Oh, Jerry Vale, the singer, right?
Sure.
It doesn't say Jerry Vale, the singer. It just says Jerry Vale. He's also in The Christmas Chronicles.
weirdly not the first time I've seen that movie come up in this podcast. I can't remember who else from our list was on in either that or the sequel, but worth mentioning briefly, at least Courtney Love in The People versus Larry Flint. It's been so long since I've seen the movie that I don't know if she's unfairly pilloried for that movie, but I remember liking it all right.
Yeah, I liked it. She was in Man on the Moon as well.
Which I've never seen.
I know she was on that Fox show Empire with Terrence.
Really? I didn't Howard. Know that.
I feel like there's something else that I'm missing that she was in that I saw her in, but oh well. And then Feeling Minnesota, but I never saw that actually.
Okay. And then I just wanted to give a shout out to Kim Gordon because she was in the aforementioned Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot, which rocks, and also Boarding Gate, the Olivia Sayas movie, which heavily rocks. And that's all I got from my discards list.
Yeah, I wish there's more, like, I wish I had thought to think more of like singers who, or musicians who just showed up, you know, who aren't like really actors, but like,
yeah,
they just kind of
like did a part.
In Clue the movie, which is a movie that I grew up on, but I am more than willing to admit kind of sucks.
How brave of you.
It's like sacrilege for so many people my age to admit that that's a dumb movie, but it's not a very good movie. But Mr. Body, the guy who first gets killed, is Lee Ving from the band Fear.
Oh, that made me just realize we didn't mention Flea at all.
Oh yeah.
Who's been in like tons of stuff.
But also like he's one who's like, he's been acting like he was in Suburbia.
True.
Which is like at least about the same time as the Chili Peppers. So it does seem like he's been both his entire career.
Yeah.
We
saw Flea perform at UCB. He was the monologuist for one of those ASCAT shows.
Yeah.
We were in line to see ASCAT. My brother was visiting and Flea just walked by on the sidewalk and Chris was like, Flea! And then we walked in to see the show and like, there he was giving the monologue.
He's in such random.
I know.
Yeah.
In the Big Lebowski.
He's in Queen and Slim.
Absolutely.
Boy or Race.
He's
Baby Driver,
Toy Story 4.
He's good in Queen and Slim. Him and Chloe Savini are a married couple.
That's right. Yeah. I was trying to
remember. Oh, and he's in the forthcoming Babylon.
There you go.
Great.
Probably playing himself as just some weird timeless like, maniac.
All right. This has gone on too long.
Hey, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. It's been actually a lot of fun. What's that?
You have to get up and drive forever. Have fun with that.
Yeah. I have a big day of driving tomorrow. So, this has been great. You can find us at battleshippretension.com. Again, caringbridge.org/visit/Tyler and Jennifer Smith for info about Tyler. You can email me at david@battleshippretension.com. You can follow me on Twitter for now still at Davey Pretension. Let's start with Julie. Julie, where do you want people to find you?
Well, again, I don't know if it feels wise to direct people to my Twitter right now in these weird waning days of ancient Rome or whatever, but I don't know. You can't find me. I'm enigmatic. Just like be good to each other. I don't know.
Be excellent to one another.
Be excellent to one another. Yeah.
Scott?
Definitely picked up more Letterboxd followers of late. So I'm guessing that's from the show. So thanks, guys. Hope you've been enjoying me. Forget to post thoughts on the movies I've been seeing. But still on Twitter, still got the account locked down. But did make an account on Hive. So come hang out on Hive, which is apparently run by two people and performs about as well as you'd expect an app run by two people. But it's kind of a fun little vibe we got going on.
No, but it has been kind of difficult to
use.
Yeah.
And then join us here next week when I will surely drive David absolutely insane with an episode that will go far too long.
I'm so excited. I can't wait. All right.
You say that now. This time next week, man. It's going to be a different scene.
Scott, thank you for being here.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Julie, thank you for filling in as co-host.
Of course. My pleasure.
Thank you at home for listening.
We'll get you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
This program is a proud member of the Battleship Pretension Fleet.